This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Nick, a terrible thing has happened.
What's that?
I blew out my flip-flop.
Did you step on a pop-top?
I did. I cut my heel and had to cruise on back home.
You cut your heel?
It's true. And I know it seems unlikely.
Now, if there was a way to sum up how you feel about cutting your heel, how would you say that is?
I feel like crap.
Damn it, Greg. I figured you were going to say that. That can't be me with a sliced open heel gushing blood.
That's not fair. Me heading to the emergency room to pay an outlandish bill? That's not fair. Nick, I'd suggest that for certain podcasters, not all, but for some in this room right now, in this L-shaped studio, life isn't fair.
That's right.
And for some of those few that are here to which this would apply, I would suggest that life sucks and then you die. You can't see it right now, but my eyes actually dilated as I delivered that line. It was something else. But we are the Hard Traveling Fanboys. You are listening to the longest running weekly episodic comic book podcast in all the Place to Be Nation. And perhaps one could argue in all of sports entertainment.
Even though our podcast is about neither sports nor entertainment.
No, it's about entertainment.
Kind of. Vaguely.
It isn't entertaining, but it's about entertainment.
Yeah, your mileage may vary, for sure.
We are in the L-shaped studio, that's Vancouver, here. British Columbia, Canada. Ho-Ho Loon Plaza, and we are ready to continue with what we started last week, which is the second theme month in a row, Nick, Shazam month.
Shazam! It's not going to be, we're not going to get through this episode unless you do your Gomer pile at some point.
Shazam!
There it is.
To not do my Gomer pile would be complete mental insanity.
They should do a reboot of Gomer pile that instead has Billy Bob Thornton as Carl Childers as Gomer pile.
Shazam. That Mr. Bill Cox, they say that a right smart. Anyway, we're not here to talk about Mr. Bill Cox. We're not here to talk about flowers being pretty. We're here to talk about the number one movie in America, Nick.
Was it? I didn't even look at the final box office tally.
It was. It finished with in the top spot with an amount of money.
I wasn't sure just because Pet Sematary also came out this week, and I know it's R-rated, so I figured Shazam would probably edge it out, but I wasn't positive coming into the week.
Shazam finished number one with $53.5 million at the box office.
What
Pet Sematary second with $24.6 million.
Not even close. Impressive.
And Dumbo in third with $18.3 million. That, of course, being a movie about the life of Nick Duke.
I see what you did there. Captain Marvel, still in the top five, weeks later, made $12 million over the weekend. It's got to be. What's its total up to now? Domestic.
As is us.
Domestic, $373 million. Probably over a billion worldwide, I would imagine.
Well, let's find out. There's this website that I always use, that most people use anyway, called Box Office Mojo. And it supposedly tells you things about movies and how much money they make, but sometimes it doesn't have the information you're looking for.
Sometimes it doesn't.
This would be one of those times.
Worldwide gross is $1,040,000,000.
That's incredible, isn't it?
Insane. In what? When did it come out? March?
March 8th, so.
Like 5 weeks? Nuts.
Yeah. Crazy. Just imagine how much the movie that we write together is going to make. Not our original characters come up with.
Yeah. Original characters who all oddly sound, look, and act like Jim Ross.
Hello, I am the latest superhero, Max Stonecutter.
And I'm the villain.
Pedro Gonzalez.
You only said that because you watched that Bruce and Brody documentary.
I did. It was good.
No, it was great. Yeah, it was really, really good. It's just, you know, it's one of those you sit down to watch and it's like, it's how I feel about a lot of true crime documentaries that get made about cases I'm interested in, where I know there's never going to be like a satisfactory ending to it.
Right.
You know, because nobody's going to, the only person who's going to talk is Tony Atlas. And nobody else is going to say anything, and Puerto Rico is a corrupt island nation, or island state. So, you know, what can you do?
Oh, boy.
But we digress.
Well, we do digress. Shazam, the number one movie in America right now. This, of course, is the first time that we have gotten on the big screen by a major Hollywood studio, Captain Marvel, DC's version of Captain Marvel, a.k.a. Shazam. And this movie was considered something of a risk when it was announced, Nick. And by that, I mean Warner Brothers considers any property a risk that isn't Batman or Superman.
Indeed. To the point where, if I remember correctly, I wasn't paying attention, close attention to the opening credits of this movie. But didn't they technically set this up over at New Line rather than at Warner Brothers proper? Because mm-hmm. they were kind of, you know, thinking right. it might be more of a fringe film that New Line is typically charged with producing and releasing.
Right. The original thought, I remember when this went into development, the original thought was they wanted to set this apart from the DCEU when they were first developing it because they were not certain of it. They weren't sure that it was going to work out. They didn't have faith in it because, again, it's not Batman or Superman. So they took a little bit of a chance on this at the time, although at that time Warner Brothers did not know that the backlash was coming to the DCEU.
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it turns out, this little niche product they were working on the side turned out to be exactly what audiences were waiting for from the DC film universe, at least the vast majority of audiences, it seems. So, and critics as well, for that matter. So, let's get into this movie. This is directed by David F. Sandberg, and I actually don't know much about this director, but he is well known for the film Lights Out, which is a horror. It looks like he's mainly known for horror movies. Lights Out mm-hmm. and Annabelle Creation. Have you seen either of these films?
I have not seen Annabelle Creation nor Lights Out, but Lights Out looked interesting to me. Is Lights Out not the or maybe I have it mixed up with the other one. Hold on. I'm looking at Lights Out. No, never mind. Lights Out is not at all what I thought it was, so move on.
You thought it was the one about the blind killer?
The blind guy, played by Stephen Lang, yes.
Well, yeah, I would have thought that too, based on the title, but that's not what it is. Mm-hmm. But no, it got reviewed well, and this is kind of his first big budget type situation that he gets thrown into. Although I really don't know what the budget was on this film. But perhaps I can find that information. It says here the budget was $80 to $100 million. not very specific,
and not a very large budget by modern blockbuster standards.
And I'm honestly, Nick, after seeing the movie, I'm a little surprised that it looks as good as it does on that budget. Mm-hmm. Because we were talking about before what was the movie that we talked about that we reviewed that we were talking about? Like even with a budget that high, how are the special effects that bad? Was it Justice League? Had to be Justice League.
Justice League, probably, I would assume.
Yeah, to have a budget that was somewhere around like $300 million and it looked like crap, you know, from a visual effects standpoint. And this is like night and day, man. It looks like a great movie. So anyway, Written, this film was, by screenplay by Henry Gayden and the story by Henry Gayden and Darren Lemke. I don't know anything about those guys either. But it's clear that the heavy influence on this film is from Geoff Johns, who wrote the Shazam New 52 kind of reimagining. This takes a ton of concepts from that run. I haven't read that run yet, but this film draws upon that from what I understand, Nick.
Yes, to the point where you and I were discussing what we're going to do for our next. We're going to do a second long book this month, and I think we finally settled on doing the Geoff Johns one next week, and I was kind of flipping through the pages after seeing the movie, and I had honestly forgotten like how much direct influence there was, in particular over their handling of like Dr. Savannah and kind of his motivations here in the early part of the story. So, yeah, lots of influence from the Geoff Johns run. The supporting cast, their take on the Marvel family, so to speak, all pretty much directly influenced by Geoff Johns.
And one of the things that we're going to try to get through this without spoiling the movie because it just came out. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I will spoil for people is don't go in expecting to see Black Adam.
Yes.
He's not in the movie.
Not in the
However, The Rock, $7 Productions are producers on the movie, mm-hmm. alongside DC, New Line, and some others. So he is a producer, so that means he's still tied into this franchise, and you might catch some hints here and there during the movie, maybe. But yeah, so this movie is the story about Billy Batson, who, as we talked about last week, is the sort of human host for the Shazam entity. He's a boy of pure heart who inherits the powers of the wizard Shazam to become the champion that defends the Earth. In the old days, he was known as Captain Marvel. These days, he's known as Shazam. And Billy Batson is sort of your central character. As we talked about last week in the Monster Society of Evil book, Billy Batson is the single most important character to get right in any Shazam story, because you have to feel attached to him in some way. And in this case, a young actor named Asher Angel is actually playing the part of Billy Batson, and this is my first time seeing this this kid acting. Billy's about 14-15 years old, and he's kind of, when we pick up this movie, he's kind of in a rough spot in his life, and he's, you know, he's kind of a douche. He's rough around the edges. He's an orphan who is has a rough upbringing because he's separated from his mother at an early age and kind of floats from foster family to foster family and comes to view family as a burden rather than a good thing to have in your life. So
God, I know we're trying to avoid spoilers, but you just said the words Billy's mother, and it almost made me shake with anger.
Yes, that may have been. As far as an emotional response, that was the scene of the movie.
You kind of wanted Dr. Savannah to pay a visit at that point.
Right, exactly. It's a it is a very emotional subplot, and it's and one that one that was well developed in the movie. So we pick up Billy in kind of a rough spot in the beginning of the movie, and over the course of the film, you sort of grow to identify with Billy, and I think that scene was a key one, Nick, that we're referring to. You grow to like Billy, and you grow to see Billy accept who he is and what his responsibility is and who his true family members are over the course of this film. But I think Asher Angel was very well cast. He was completely convincing to me as Billy Batson, and you know, goes from this, as you put it, kind of a douche kid to ultimately very likable and heroic by the end of the film. And this really is a hero's journey in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's also a villain's journey, but primarily it's a hero's journey. And I think the movie does a good job, a very good job, of doing that with Billy Batson. What did you make of it?
Absolutely, yeah. At the beginning of the movie, he's a little unlikable, and he's kind of thrust into the situation with these other people in the movie who seem to be genuinely good people, and he seems to be either pushing them away or taking advantage of them at most turns. And to kind of see that come full circle by the end is it's a welcome development.
And the other side of that coin, the guy who's playing Shazam, the adult, fully realized, as they put it in the film, the idealized version of Billy Batson, mm-hmm. is Zachary Levi, who was known for the TV show Chuck, big-time geek, big-time Comic-Con attendee, known for that. And he plays the character of Shazam in this movie, and he really makes this whole thing work. Everybody is well cast. Everybody delivers, but this movie doesn't work without Zachary Levi putting in probably one of my favorite comic book movie performances in some time. I was really blown away by this guy, Nick.
Yeah, and I mean, he's kind of in a difficult spot. I mean, he's essentially having to do, and not even essentially, pretty much blatantly having to do the Tom Hanks a big version of a superhero movie.
Mm-hmm.
So much so that they directly referenced that movie at one point.
Yes, in a very fun scene.
Yeah, they have to kind of own up to the comparisons, which is, you know, a wise move on their part. But, you know, Tom Hanks in that movie, if you go back and look at it, he's got to convincingly play, you know, this adult who's got to convincingly play a child. And Zach Levi is here in a similar position and does an outstanding job kind of bringing that level of immaturity and naivety and kind of precociousness, despite Billy's hard edges, that kind of all sums up to make an outstanding performance. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, and he's funny as hell in this movie.
Yeah, really.
Like, he's just so funny in this. And we should mention also, last week we talked about a classic version of Shazam that has Billy and Captain Marvel as two separate entities. Mm-hmm. Well, this is not that. This is going with a more modern interpretation, as seen in a lot of post-70s Captain Marvel stories, where Billy Batson is Captain Marvel, or is Shazam. Mm-hmm. So, in other words, it is the appearance of a grown-up hero, but with the mind of a child, or of a teenager in this case. So, that's just a different take on it. And I got to say, for me, I'm glad they went with that take because it's so unique. We've not seen anything like this in a superhero movie to this point.
No, we have not. Again, to draw back to those big comparisons, I mean, it's a subgenre that we haven't, or a story type of story we haven't seen told at this point. We've seen young heroes. We've seen adult heroes. We haven't really seen the two kind of cross-pollinated together. So, yeah, again, great approach. And as you can probably tell already, I wound up being a big fan of this one.
Mm-hmm. And probably the secondary character in this movie, the second main protagonist, if you will, is one of Billy's foster brothers that he meets in the film, Freddie Freeman, played by Jack Dylan Grazer. Mm. And I thought this kid was outstanding in the movie, playing Freddie Freeman, who loves playing pranks and loves kind of being the cool guy in the room, but also is physically disadvantaged in any situation that he finds himself in.
And kind of is kind of kept from being the cool kid in the room because he has this, you know, this superhero obsession that, you know, not like we could relate to that or anything.
Oh,
and
no.
People pick on him, and he's outcast because of both his interest in life and his physical stature. So,
yes.
Yeah, this was a great character as well.
A lot of relatability in the Freddie Freeman character for many people out there, I'm sure.
And what's remarkable is for the two, arguably the two leads of the movie, because I would say they probably take up the most screen time, they got two pretty good kid actors. I think was it Asher Angel, I think is his name. I don't think he was quite as good as the kid who played Freddie Freeman, but they were both good enough to carry the movie, which is what you need. You did not need a Jake Lloyd in episode one type performance here, or else the movie would have sunk completely.
Absolutely. It would fall apart, no doubt. And of course, we all know a hero is only as good as his villain. Mm-hmm. And in this case, comic book film and DC film veteran Mark Strong, who we praised a lot on this very podcast at one time for his role as Sinestro in the ill-fated 2011 Green Lantern film. Well, he's back in the DC film universe, and in this occasion, he's playing Dr. Thaddeus Savanna, who is one of the primary Captain Marvel villains from the comics. You know, we know primarily his villains, the most well-known would be Black Adam, Mr. Mind, and Dr. Savanna, in no particular order. And so Strong is playing this version of Savannah, and I haven't read the Geoff Johns run, Nyx, as I mentioned earlier, and so this was a totally different take on Savannah than or Savannah, whatever you want to call him, than what I am used to in the comics. And I got to say, it worked for me in a huge way. It actually makes Dr. Savannah a relatable character in some ways. And yet, I say relatable, but not a sympathetic character.
Right.
If that makes sense.
Oh, it does. And as we know, there's nobody in comics that's able to update characters with a relatable modern spin quite the way that Geoff Johns is. And this is another example of it. Because as you said earlier, this kind of takes its cues directly from the Geoff Johns interpretation of the character and is better served for it. As goofy and quirky and as funny as the version that we encountered last week in the Monster Society of Evil book was, this is a more – there's more here to sink your teeth into rather than
– more meat on the bone.
Than a, just kind of a one-note, you know, goofy villain type thing.
Absolutely. There's more cushion for the pushing with this villain.
And with the hard-traveling fanboys.
Indeed so. Indeed so. Talk about mud flaps. The hard-traveling fanboys have got them.
One of us in particular, but we'll leave that unsaid.
Oh. But yeah, so
that can't be me with an posterior with buttocks three times the proportion of my body. That's not fair.
And look at yourself in the mirror.
In the mirror with the cellulite hanging off your buttocks. Well, frankly, I can't turn around to look at myself in the mirror. I'll have you know.
Every time I turn around to look at myself in the mirror, a year passes.
A year passes.
Anyway, the Dr. Savannah, yes, great work here by Mark Strong, who just seems like one of those versatile actors that you can put into these roles, whether it's a villain role here, whether it's a heroic role in Kingsman, where he's kind of like the Alfred or the Q of Kingsman. He just always seems to smoothly fit into whatever whatever role they ask him to play. And I think it's personally, I think it's because of his slick bald head.
That's certainly a factor. Yeah, no, he's great. Like you said, kind of has some range, can play a sympathetic character, can play a straight up, you know, heroic character, and here can kind of play this villain where he has to kind of ham it up a little bit more than he did with Sinestro, because of the type of movie that he's in, and it works.
Oh my gosh, and we have to talk about the casting of his father.
Oh, I was watching the movie, and I was like, oh, I didn't know he was in this, and I went, oh, Greg's going to love that.
Yep. So the character of Dr. Savannah's father, Mr. Savannah.
Mr. Savannah. Yes.
Shane McMahon, you and your father, Mr., will be taking. Anyway, yes, of Mr. Savannah is played by John Glover, a.k.a. Lionel Luthor. I mean, what a brilliant job of casting. He is used to playing the evil father that corrupted Lex Luthor on the show Smallville, and here he plays another evil father who indirectly corrupts his son, Doctor.
Didn't he also play the doctor that created Poison Ivy in Batman and Robin?
Damn sure did. And he also played the evil corporation head in Gremlins 2, the new batch.
Didn't he also play the evil producer that was being brought in to replace Bill Murray in Scrooged?
I think he did, yeah, but he's clean-shaven in those days.
Yeah, yeah, that's what throws you off. It's like, because when he was clean-shaven, he legitimately looks like a completely different person now.
Totally. He's one of those people that looks better as an old man with a beard than he did as a young man clean-shaven.
He was in Payback?
Was he in Payback? Really?
That's what it says.
I mean, really? Was he in Payback?
He voiced the Riddler on Batman the Animated Series.
Yeah, I knew that. Yeah, he was. Yeah, if you're so smart, why aren't you rich?
And he's read a bunch of Stephen King audiobooks, apparently.
Ooh, interesting. He's got a good voice.
He's 74 years old now.
Wow, talk about wearing your age well. Wearing it better than Brigitte Nielsen.
Whew. Good Lord.
Some would argue.
Good Lord.
So let's round out the rest of this, your main cast. So he's got Billy's foster family is key here. So we have Faith Herman as Darla Dudley. Grace Fulton as Mary Bromfield, who Mary Marvel we know her as in the comic.
Now I got a question here about this one in particular. So as I understand it, in the comics they're supposed to be brother and sister, right?
That's correct.
Okay. Well, I didn't get that vibe here. It seems like they're taking that a different direction at some
point. Well, yeah,
in
the comic they actually turn out to be I believe in most interpretations biological brother and sister. In the reimagined version they are not biological brother and sister.
Mm, and they're
it would appear.
And they're involved.
Are they?
I think so. I think that's where they're going here.
You think they're involved?
Mm-hmm.
They're involved is what you are.
Thank God she's legal. Never mind. I was gonna feel really bad about it.
I knew exactly what you were thinking. I knew it.
But she,
I could read your I
she
could read
is
your mind
in so. Fact legal, Greg. I have no I am absolved from all issues.
You're absolved of what you are. Oh boy. Yeah, she played, Mary Marvel.
She played Natalie Wood in a made-for-TV movie about Natalie Wood.
And it's interesting that Michelle Borth plays the I don't want to reveal.
Yeah, that's.
She plays someone else, but yes, Grace Fulton, yes, as Mary, and she's sort of the den mother, the oldest child of the foster home. Then you've got Ian Chen as Eugene Choi, who's a younger foster brother, who's a big techie and gamer and all that stuff. He was funny as hell in the movie, by the way. The scene where he grabs the nun. Well, I don't want to reveal it, but there's a funny scene involving him and some other kids. It's quite good. You know the scene I'm referring to, Nick, I'm sure.
I do.
Jovan Armand as Pedro Pena, who's kind of quiet and
go ahead.
Vision.
And
he's fat.
There it is. Yeah.
And he envisions himself as a power lifter, so he works out his arms a lot. Mm. And so he dreams of being really, really strong. And and then, of course, wrapping things up, we've got the foster parents, which I know we're excited to talk about, Nick, because the mother, Marta Millons, is Rosa Vasquez, who's a mother who's extremely attached to these children because she herself is a foster child. And the father, who is also a foster child, and that is Cooper Andrews, who's playing Victor Vasquez. And Cooper Andrews is better known to fans of our show and fans of AMC's The Walking Dead as Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
Nick, I had no idea, I'd forgotten that Jerry is in this movie until I watched it last night. I about marked out in that empty movie theater when I saw Jerry appear on screen. I was just delighted.
He wasn't quite as, you know, aloof and stoner archetype as Jerry is, but I'll allow it. He was very good in the movie.
He was very good.
Didn't have a ton of screen time, but kind of left an impression despite his relatively small amount of usage.
Nick, if only do you think Jim Ross would have a way of describing what someone does when they take advantage of their limited time?
No, I don't. I don't know of any such phrase. Do you?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. Mr. Ross is here in the studio. Jim, could you come over here for a minute? What would be the term you would use for that situation? Well, be sure, first of all, to listen to my new podcast with Connie. Oh, my boy, those cheeks. Anyway, I would say that they are this Jerry maximized his minutes. Thank you very much, Mr. Ross. So there you have it, Nick. Maximized his minutes in the film. And another cool kind of casting quirk in these comic book movies, and we're seeing this more often, Nick. Perhaps this is something we need to talk about at some point as a topic of discussion. The character of the wizard, Shazam, in this film is played by someone who is actually currently in the Marvel Cinematic Universe and who actually appeared in Marvel's Captain Marvel movie a month ago. That character, of course, is Jimon Hounsou. Did I say that right?
Jimon Hounsou, I think, is how you pronounce it, but I don't know.
Close enough. And this actor portrayed both a Kree soldier and has now portrayed the wizard Shazam in DC. So kind of interesting to see somebody, again, another actor, dipping his toes in both companies' water, so to speak.
Yeah, this was cool. And kind of a, you know, usually when you see the wizard depicted, he's an elderly white guy. And so kind of interesting they went a different direction. Let's consult YouTube on how to pronounce his name. Let's see what YouTube has to say on the subject. Let's see here. YouTube.
Greg was right. Oh, there you go.
Hold on.
Jaimon Hansu.
Jaimon Hansu.
Mm-hmm. Jaimon
Hansu.
There you go.
There you have it. There you have it. Jaimon Hansu. He's in here as a particularly angry version of the wizard Shazam.
Mm-hmm. Which is more realistic because he's getting old near his life. And
yeah.
Near the end of his life, he's cranky.
He has to
yeah.
deal with all these little shits that keep coming up to him and not being worthy.
Yeah, nobody's ever worthy. I mean, all you asked really was for a kid who's never done anything wrong in his life. That's, I mean, what's so hard to find about that?
Oh, that can't be me. Me looking for a literal perfect human being child to inherit my powers and take over my throne and protect the world. That's not fair. Yeah. So, you know, he plays an angry version of the wizard. You know, I have to say, he was really good in here, but he's not my fantasy casting for the wizard Shazam.
Who would that be?
Well, it would be the Taskmaster Kevin Sullivan.
I would have said Chris Lee, even though I think he's dead now. Is he dead? Is Christopher Lee dead? I don't know.
I feel like he is. It seems like a safe assumption. Let's turn to the Google machine. Let's take after our overlords and look at the Google machine here.
Yeah, he's dead.
And, oh well.
But yeah, because if you remember, like when he played Saruman in Lord of the Rings, he kind of even looked like how the wizard Shazam is traditionally drawn.
True.
In comics. So, like, that was always how I kind of saw it.
However, I would remind you that when he led the Dungeon of Doom, Kevin Sullivan kind of looked like how the wizard Shazam looks in the comics.
Not really, but fair enough.
But he had the long white hair.
He had, like, the shoulder-length white hair.
Yeah, he had a little beard going on.
That almost that just kind of looked like a weird... That hair had a weird shape to it. You couldn't tell if it was, like, trying to be a mullet or maybe a rat, like a longer rat tail or something. Just a weird look.
Or they could have brought in the master himself if he's still alive. Sullivan! My son. The important thing to remember here, folks, is that it wasn't hot. But what is hot is this movie. This movie really does a great job of capturing the youthful exuberance of the comic book character while also having pathos and stakes. Because I know, Nick, that's one of your complaints about the, quote, lighthearted comic book movies that we've gotten, is many of them, in your opinion, have seemed to lack stakes at times,
yes.
Lack emotional weight,
yes.
If you will.
Because they're focused on having on humor at the expense of any kind of emotional storytelling.
And I felt like this movie did a brilliant job, really, of balancing the humor and the action and the emotional weight of the story, because I actually bought in to the story they were telling here, the drama they were telling here with the family, the inspirational message of the movie really landed in a big way with me, because the movie was so effective at making these characters human beings and not making them these, particularly in the cases of Billy, Freddie, and the parents, not making them these like untouchable figures. You know, we talked about that with Man of Steel, about how it humanized Superman. This gave us human characters and also gave us that aspirational feel good aspect that is essential to the Captain Marvel Shazam mythos.
Yeah, I would agree.
So let's talk about the action in this movie, not spoiling individual scenes here, but I was really impressed. I mean, I don't think there are any, you know, one-on-one fight scenes that are going to, you know.
No, there's nothing in here that's like
the industry.
But, right, that's like overly innovative, but it's all, it is all stuff you've seen before for the most part, but it's all executed very well. And like you said earlier, to be a movie on an $80 to $100 million budget, it looks surprisingly good in these CGI heavy moments.
Absolutely, it's like a Randy Orton of movies, where it's not going to do too many things you haven't seen before. It's not going to give you a 450 splash, but it's just going to do what it does really, really well. And I thought it went out and delivered.
And even the moments where the special effects slip a little bit during action sequences, you almost get the feeling that it's intentional. With a group of characters in particular, that they're kind of supposed to look a little cheesy and a little over the top.
Right.
Yeah, so you're willing to go with it a little bit more than you are in more earnest films.
The thing that I maybe wasn't expecting as much, Nick, in this, is that it actually does tie itself to the greater DC universe. We have outright references to Superman and Batman, and then if you pay attention to the credits sequences of just like not the post-credit scene or the mid-credit scene, which you get in this film, but if you pay attention to the actual sequence leading into the credits, there are references to Aquaman and Wonder Woman and The Flash, and probably Cyborg. I don't remember seeing him in there, but he's probably in there too.
And you also see Freddie Freeman wearing like merchandise specific to the DCEU throughout the film, like the 2018 movie version of the Aquaman logo, or the 2017 version of the Wonder Woman logo. So things like that.
Absolutely. And the one of the other I wanted to draw special attention to one of the other characters in this film that stood out to me, which is Darla, the character of Darla Dudley. That girl was just adorable. She was cute and funny and just brought a lot to the movie. She added a lot of heart to the movie. And actually, I was watching it a late night show. It was just me and three other people, and there were still awes dropped at different parts during the movie. So, got to give them credit on that, on the casting, and just presenting a likable character that really is, I think, the most essential character early on to attaching Billy to this family. Mm-hmm. And the action is great in the movie. Delivers across the board. And definitely sets the stage for potential sequels down the line. Hopefully we will get those. I think we will. And I was just really – I walked away from this movie very impressed, Nick. I got to say that sometimes you go into a movie and you're like, well, did it match up to the critics' hype? Or and we're like, yeah, it probably did. But very rarely these days do I go into a movie and it actually exceeds my expectations to this level. I was expecting – I said this with Aquaman. It exceeded my expectations because I had my expectations set somewhat low. This vastly exceeded my expectations.
I would agree as well. I think we were both cautiously optimistic about the movie, but we're kind of expecting just an average, you know, an above average movie, I guess, kind of what I was looking for. And what we wound up getting was a damn good movie that kind of, that unlike Justice League in the DCEU, knows what it is and sets out to be the best version of that and mostly succeeds along the way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So where would this sit in your rankings of the DCEU pantheon? I think for me, it's either, if it's not one, it's two. I think I liked it more than I liked Aquaman, which I liked a lot.
Wait. Okay. So DC, what counts as DCEU?
Everything from Man of Steel on.
Okay. So Man of Steel is still my number one. Wonder Woman would be two. And then are we counting the ultimate cut of BVS?
Sure, why not?
I'll go this, and then I'll go the ultimate cut of BVS after that. And then I'd have Justice League and Suicide Squad would be dead fucking last.
So Aquaman would be right after ultimate cut, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that's accurate. Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would have... I'd have to rewatch Wonder Woman. My gut instinct is I would put this, man, it's, for me, it's neck and neck with Man of Steel.
Yeah, because you said two a minute ago, and like I was assuming you had forgotten Wonder Woman.
I had at that time, and I really need to rewatch it again to see. I think my pure gut instinct, this was, I'd put this, right now, I'd edge it out a little bit ahead of Wonder Woman, but it's close for me. Like, they're both really – all three of those, I think, are really good. The gap between the top three is much tighter than the gap between all the rest of the movies.
Yeah,
so like, I think there's a precipitous drop off as you go down the list.
Let me do mine again, just because like, now that I've got them all in my head. Yeah, so I would have Man of Steel 1, Wonder Woman 2, this third, BVS Ultimate Cut at 4, Aquaman at 5, Suicide Squad at 6, or excuse me, Justice League at 6, Suicide Squad at 7. So there have been 7 of them. And 5 of them are good. Like
pretty good, yeah.
The Ultimate Cut of BVS, to me, fixed a lot of the issues with that movie. Not all the issues, but a lot of the issues.
There are some. I think I would probably, I might still put Aquaman in front of it, but it's close between those two. But yeah, Ultimate Cut is the only way to watch that movie, as we've talked about before. And this is a movie that I kind of feel like doesn't really need any kind of an extra cut to it or anything. It was really well edited, really well together. It didn't feel too short, didn't feel too long.
They did not feel like there were entire scenes missing from the plot the way it did in the theatrical cut.
Or, if you want to go back further, or in Green Lantern for that matter.
Oh, God, don't even.
Well, with that being said, folks, we want to get your feedback on this movie once you've seen it. Hit us up on Twitter at gphillips8652, at nickduke87. Drop us a line, gregp@placetobenation.com, nickd@placetobenation.com, or join the Place to Be Nation Comics Facebook page. Just type in Place to Be Nation Comics and join up and tell us your thoughts on the Shazam movie. Does it meet our hype? Did you like it less than us, more than us? Let us know your thoughts on this and what you would like to see from the franchise moving forward. Obviously, we think we're going to get a Black Adam movie at some point. We have a pretty good idea after this movie of where the sequel is going to go. So they've set themselves up pretty well for the future. And if it does well enough, you could potentially see spinoffs involving other Captain Marvel affiliated characters. So keep an eye out on that, and we'll keep an eye out for your feedback. When we return back from the break, we will have Reading and Watching. We will have the Rundown. We'll have the Wrestling Minute, post-WrestleMania edition, and may even have an appearance from good old JR himself.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on 2 great feeds. In the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content. Offer tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. We want to thank our friends at Boneheads, Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hi there. Words we've never heard.
Words we've never heard, that's right. Oh, hi there.
Hi there.
Big time.
Welcome back to the Hard Traveling Fanboys, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you to all the wonderful shows that you can find right here at Place to Be Nation, Place to Be Nation Wrestling, Place to Be Nation Pop, a veritable podcast heaven of cornucopias and whatnot. But nonetheless, cornucopia or no, we're here to tell you about a few other things in specifics that you need to be looking into, because to not do so would be shameful. To start things off, PTBN Pop Feed. We had a... Nick, stop me if you've heard this. We've got a busy week here on the Pop Feed. A little bit of something for everyone.
There's a little bit of something for everyone? No. I don't believe you. The hell you say?
The hell you think? Yeah, but whose side is he on? Steve and Kelly are joined by Jason Sherman on the newest Songs with Friends. And, of course, they are discussing Bush.
Yeah,
the band.
Bush. No, Bush. Damn it.
Not the pubic region or the former president or the other former president or anything else Bush related.
I think of those four options, the two presidents, the pubic region, and the band is clearly the worst of the four options. regardless of your feelings on their politics, at least those two presidents gave us, respectively, Dana Carvey as George H.W. Bush and Will Ferrell as George W. Bush.
Dignitude. Greg and Nick are here with that's our own show. I'm not gonna put it on our show. How stupid is that? I'll do it anyway. We're here with the Long Book Hunters edition of the Hard Traveling Fanboys, and they are exploring Shazam, the Monster Society of Evil. Oh, and also check out their third anniversary special featuring the essential Jim Ross. Actually, I would recommend people check that show out. It is an editing master job by the manager, Todd Weber. Andrew and Adam are breaking down where the non-NBA playoff teams like the Atlanta Hawks are headed in the newest NBA team podcast, Nick.
I have a hard time keeping track, Greg. Are all six of your NBA teams going to the playoffs this year?
Oh, Lord. Here's that again. All six. You know I have two. I have two NBA teams. Jazz.
Indiana Pacers. You have to make sure that your favorite teams list includes, 25% of any given league. I believe that's your rule.
Oh, Lord. I'm sorry. Shaquille O'Neal's no longer playing, so are you legally allowed to root for anybody in the NBA?
I am rooting for the Atlanta Hawks, as you know.
That's a new development in the last couple years.
A new development.
You don't know nothing about no Steve Smith.
I've forgotten more about the Steve Smith, Christian Laettner, Mookie Blaylock, Dikembe Mutombo, late 90s Hawks than you'll ever know in your life. Don't tell me, you son of a bitch.
The Marvel Age.
You don't even know who Mookie Blaylock is, and sitting there telling me about Steve Smith. Shut up.
I know who Mookie Blaylock is. I played NBA Jam.
That's the only reason you know him.
The Marvel Age crew is here and moving into the first half of 1970, Nick. Bell bottoms are coming into fashion.
Rick Jones is still a thing.
Rick Jones, bitch. Jenny and Tim welcome the illustrious Glenn Butler to the hot and high seat for this month's Talkin' Pop. Glenn Butler, longtime companion of mine through the wrestling blog of Doom. If people remember that are listening, probably not. Geek and Sassy couldn't let awards season come to an end without the second annual Sassies. So check out what Jenny and Miranda's fans had to say as they officially put a bow on 2018. I like to think that my votes made a big difference in the outcomes here.
Mine as well, which I didn't submit.
I did submit. I submitted
votes
in virtually every category. Mm. A new contest is being held over on Looking Forward and Looking Back. We will be doing a summer movie wager based on how well you think you can predict how this summer's movie releases will do at the domestic box office. What you need to do is pick the top 10. That was a very aggressive way of saying that. I'm going to redo that sentence. What you need to do is pick the top 10 movies in order of how you think they will finish in domestic box office gross. See, it's different because before I said what you need to do, which puts a level of expectation on it. Anyway, you will also need to include three wild card picks as well as which movie you think will be the biggest bomb of the summer. Hellboy.
Yeah, how are you defining the biggest bomb? Is it money earned compared to money spent? Is it lowest box office gross? Because if that's the case, then it's going to be some movie that none of us have ever heard of that only airs in three theaters, you know?
True. I think it has to be some sort of a budget versus box office comparison. I don't know what the budget is on Hellboy, so perhaps I shouldn't have said it. Oh, unfortunately, Nick, what about Dark Phoenix? That has to be a contender, potentially. I hope not.
I think that'll make money, but, I am not optimistic about the artistic quality of that film, as you know.
Send your picks to lflbpop@gmail.com by Monday, April 22nd. Any movie that is released on or after April 26th is eligible, and the tally ends on Labor Day, September 2nd. The winner of the contest gets to be on a future episode of Laugh In Theater and pick the comedy movie of their choosing. And when I win this contest, I will be selecting one of the three Austin Powers films to watch, whichever one I haven't already watched by then.
Hey, I'm pretty sure you could just be on the show without having to win the contest, but that's neither here nor there.
You don't know that.
Meanwhile, over at the PTBN wrestling feed, Chris and Devon are here. Chris and Devon are here with the PTBN WrestleMania 35 reaction show. JT and
Did
Chad
they get the tables. Nick?
They might. They might get the tables. JT and Chad returned with a new Wrestling Warzone as they finish off 1995 with a discussion about Starrcade. I know based on some Twitter this week that Chad's got some thoughts about Dusty Rhodes' commentary that I'm not sure I even want to hear.
I don't even know if I want to dignify them.
With a response,
we're getting the late breaking addition to this list here, Nick.
What's that?
Are you looking at the live read right now?
No. Yes, I am. Are they adding something?
Well, it looks like Nate Milton and his crew are here to break down WrestleMania 35 on a special edition of Chain Reaction.
Well, that's good, because I certainly don't see that, but that's all right. And we continue our dip into the Where the Big Boys Play vault as Chad and Parv start to look at Starrcade 1987. And then those two idiots, Nick and Greg, delivered What If Number 2 as they examined a world where CM Punk doesn't leave WWE in 2014.
Excuse me, I don't know the pod blast to which you're referring.
Excuse me, What If Wrestling. Now, and also, be sure to check out PlaceToBeNation.com, and stop me again if you've heard this before, Greg, as things are getting back up and running over there, with plenty of projects and reviews to come, content will be picking back up in the days and weeks ahead.
Ooh, you switched it up on me there a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's very good. So, with all that being said, that is the end of the live read, and now we move on to the segment of the show that we call our weekly look at the news and notes of the world of the comic book stuff. The Rundown.
Welcome to the Rundown. What
the hell is wrong with you?
The hell, you say? They got nothing to do with no mafia. I can tell you that. I can tell you that right now. All right. So, talked about Shazam, the number one movie in America in the first half of this year podcast. Well, it looks as if Warner Brothers is all in New Line or already getting the ball rolling on a sequel, because Shazam screenplay writer Henry Gayden Gayden, which however you pronounce it, has signed on to write a sequel for Warner Brothers and New Line Cinemas, according to The Wrap. David F. Sandberg and producer Peter Safran are expected to return. And The Rock has recently stated that his Black Adam film is expected to begin filming in about a year. So, you know, I always criticize DC and Warner Brothers for greenlining sequels before they see the reaction to a first movie. But in this case, hopefully the movie does well enough to sustain itself financially, because, man, I want to see a sequel to this.
Yeah, I do too. And it makes sense that, you know, after the, you know, not, it didn't do monster numbers, but it came in above projections. I think the word of mouth on it has been overwhelmingly positive. It's probably a good move to go ahead and get the ball rolling on this.
Yes. Yes, I would agree with that. Well, that wasn't the only news coming this week from the world of DC films, because we also got the first teaser trailer, or I guess second teaser trailer, but first real trailer of
Was there the a teaser upcoming trailer before?
Well, there was that clip. There was a little teaser that leaked online that was just a clip of him dancing around and smiling, remember?
Oh, yeah. But that wasn't even a trailer. It was like 15 seconds.
Just a little teaser, if you will. Well, we got our first teaser trailer of the Joaquin Phoenix-led Joker film. And, gosh, Nick, this is a movie that both of us have been consistently negative on.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand the point of it.
Don't understand the point of it. I'm standing by that one.
We don't think that the character needs an origin.
Also standing by that.
We just don't like the concept. However, teaser trailer dropped this week and was really good.
Yeah. It's a good trailer. It shows you kind of what they're going for with this movie, which is it's going to be a comic book movie that seemingly is not going to look and feel like a comic movie. It seems much more like a serious character study in the vein of a Taxi Driver or
right. Taxi Driver is what it reminded me of.
Yeah, apparently there's also a Martin Scorsese movie called The King of Comedy that it is heavily influenced by that I've never seen. But yeah, it's going to be much more of a dramatic character study than anything else. So, you know, with Joaquin Phoenix attached, I am sure the movie is going to wind up being watchable, but I still question the need for it. And the need for it, I guess, is to make money, and they know that we're idiot marks who are going to go pay for the money, you know, pay our money to see the movie, regardless of if we think it should exist. So why am I complaining? Why do I complain? Because I'm going to go watch it anyway, because I'm an idiot.
Right. And here's the sad part, Nick. We'll probably go watch it, and it will probably be a good movie.
Yeah, probably so.
He's a good actor, and I can already tell you his Joker is already more interesting than Jared Leto's ever was.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
So, yeah, this might end up being one of those movies that I don't like conceptually, but I end up liking the finished product. Well, we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. You can't judge a movie by its trailer. Mm-hmm. Suicide Squad, still in the news. We got report this week. Deadshot is actually not going to be in the Suicide Squad sequel in an attempt, a mutual decision to potentially preserve the possibility of Will Smith returning in the future. They're keeping Idris Elba in the movie, but he will not be playing Floyd Lawton, a.k.a. Deadshot. They believe that because of schedule conflicts, they had to take Will Smith out. They want to preserve the possibility of him returning in the future, but mainly they want to move on and present a new character. A lot of speculation about this, Nick. Are we thinking Bronze Tiger?
Bronze Tiger is a possibility. I don't think it would happen, but wouldn't it be awesome if he were playing Deathstroke?
Ooh, I like it. I like it. I like it a lot. Or even playing Catman from the Gail Simone Secret Six era. Yeah,
that'd be pretty cool.
Well, if you are sad about not seeing Deadshot, you can see one of Deadshot's great opponents on the big screen this summer, late spring, because the Tim Burton Universe Batman films will be re-released in theaters around the country this May. And this includes, of course, Batman, Batman Returns, Batman Forever, Nick's favorite, and Batman and Robin, the latter two directed by Joel Schumacher. Now, Nick, I see a showing here that I might be able to attend on Saturday, May 4th in the Montgomery area, potentially, of Batman. I wouldn't mind seeing that in the big screen.
I cannot commit to any such screening at this juncture in time.
Well, it's an exciting thing nonetheless. I like it when they release old movies on the big screen again. I always am a mark for that. I went and saw Purple Rain a couple years ago. So,
and I actually already have my tickets for the 40th anniversary screening of Alien in October.
Ooh, cool.
Yep. So, very cool. Looking forward to that.
We have an update to a story that we told you all about last week via Newsarama that the stars of New Mutants didn't know if it was coming out yet. In an update to that story, at CinemaCon on Wednesday evening, Disney presented on-screen graphics indicating that the New Mutants movie will maintain its theatrical release this year. No date listed next to it, but it was on the theatrical release schedule. So maybe the movie is still coming out, Nick.
Maybe. I'd like to see it. I think at this point, there's like a bizarre curiosity surrounding it. You know, it'll be, if nothing else, a novelty if it does ever see the light of day. So
a novelty like the chronology of the great Ray Stevens.
Yes.
Or a novelty more along the lines of, I don't know, Weird Al. Where does it fall on the novelty line?
What about a novelty more along the lines of Cletus T. Judd?
Now, let's not put it on an unreachable pedestal. I mean, Cletus T. Judd gave us the song, She Has a Butt Bigger than the Beatles. Beatles.
Yes, that's true.
Hating me at a house and home.
Oh. Hamburgers, hot dogs, a dozen bear claws.
Yum, yum. Good Lord. What has happened? Marvel is a big part of Disney's upcoming streaming service, Disney Plus. Big part of it, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently got some announcements about some new elements to that Disney Plus and Marvel relationship. Did we not? Yes, is the answer to that. One of them is that Marvel Studios will be producing two Marvel-centric docu-series for that Disney Plus streaming service. The first of the series is titled Marvel 616. It's produced by Chef's Table documentarians, The Supper Club, whoever they are, and focuses on the ways Marvel's stories and characters relate to real-world people, including creators. It's a reference to, the 616 universe. It says here that it will explore the intersection between Marvel's rich legacy of stories, characters, and creators and the world outside your window. Told through the lens of a diverse group of filmmakers, each documentary dives into the rich historical, cultural, and societal context that has become inseparable from the stories of the Marvel Universe. The other series is called Marvel's Hero Project. It's described as a feel-good kids show focused on young people who have made a difference in their communities. Nick, your thoughts?
I'm pumped for this. The Hero Club one, or whatever it's called, is what it is. I'm not overly jazzed about that one, but the 616 project sounds awesome. Especially because we know Disney is putting a lot of resources into this streaming service. So if they take the time to do these and do them right, as I know they will, this should be really, really cool and something that, honestly, I'd like to see DC do more of with DC Universe, more original documentaries type material produced for that service.
Yeah. More exciting to me than those, though, to be honest,
for sure,
is the next announcement, which is that we are going to be getting a Hawkeye solo show starring Jeremy Renner that will be an adventure series in which Clint Barton trains his successor, Kate Bishop, to take the mantle of Hawkeye. I'm all over this, Nick.
Yeah.
Kate Bishop is an awesome character. The run in which this happens in the comics is one of my favorite Marvel books that I've read, so I'm really excited about this.
Yeah, it sounds good. Makes sense, given the fact that, as we understand it, there's going to be something of a changing of the guard as it relates to the membership of the Avengers in the MCU post-Endgame. So this all makes sense. And it signifies, I guess it's a slight spoiler, though, does it not signify that perhaps Clint Barton is still on the table at the end of Endgame? Or do we think perhaps he trained her prior to Endgame and she just never appears until after Endgame?
My opinion is that a lot of these series are going to be taking place in the past. They're going to be limited series that will be taking place in pockets of time that aren't necessarily after the events of Endgame. I believe this will be taking place in whatever the time jump that we get, that we see Hawkeye become Ronin. Mm-hmm. I think that perhaps it takes place during that time or before the events of Endgame, perhaps. We'll see. I don't know. I don't know that it'll necessarily be after that. I don't think it's necessarily a spoiler.
Mm. Well, we'll certainly find out, but I'm excited nonetheless. Disney Plus has quickly become, given the plethora of original content they've announced for, that all sounds awesome. It is a
must purchase.
Must have for me.
Indeed so. Well, you talked about a changeover in the cast in the MCU. Well, we've witnessed the changeover on The Walking Dead. Rick is off to do movies for AMC in The Walking Dead
universe. A Rick trilogy.
Which I'm certain I can't wait to watch. We've got Fear the Walking Dead, which is still chugging along with Morgan now as its central character. We've got the regular Walking Dead, which has a new lead cast along with some old favorites. And we are also getting a third ongoing Walking Dead television show that AMC announced. And let me see what they say here in the announcement. They say that it's going to be female-led. And this is not a well-written press release. They don't have the essential information at the top. shit, we don't know what it's about. So, two young female protagonists and focus on the first generation to come of age in the apocalypse as we know it. Some will become heroes. Some will become villains. In the end, Nick, mm-hmm. all of them will be changed forever. I'm not going to watch this.
There's one way to get me to watch this.
Okay.
Clementine.
Ooh, I didn't think about that.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to do it.
No,
because that would be the only way.
Two women leads, but yeah, that would be great. Yeah, I would watch that too.
Yeah, but it says coming of age, so like it has to be, you know, teenage focused, I would think.
True. Yeah, let me just, as an aside here, rant about, this is somebody that works for AMC Studios. American Movie Classics, right, Nick?
I don't somebody know what that, it stands for.
Somebody that works for a major television network. Presumably, and I'm just guessing here, spitballing here, I'm presuming that they make a significant amount more money than we make. This is one of the shittiest press releases that I've seen from a damn television station. That information that I just read to you about what the show's about, the premise of the show, mm-hmm. is the second to last paragraph in this press release.
Oh.
Buried underneath blocks and blocks and blocks of multi-sentence quotes from different sources.
So what you're saying is, that can't be me being a better writer than someone who I know makes substantially more money than I do. That's not
That's
fair.
That's not fair. Exactly what I'm saying, Nate. Oh, well, it's my own fault and yours as well. Good for you, AMC press release writer.
Mm-hmm.
In any event, Walmart. We all shop there on occasion, right? Go there to get butt plugs and things of that nature, spark plugs.
Nobody buys butt plugs at Walmart.
Hair plugs. You don't know that. People might buy butt plugs at Walmart.
I don't think they sell, you know, intentional.
You can use a lot of things as a butt
plug. Right, but I'm saying I don't think they sell butt plugs specifically at Walmart.
No, but they sell cork at Walmart, don't they?
I don't know that they just sell cork by itself. They sell cork in wine, but I don't know that you can just go buy cork. And also,
you like purchase.
And also, I don't know if you've ever how much experience you've had with wine cork. It's not big enough to really serve as a butt plug.
Maybe your sphincter's just too big.
Maybe it is. I'm just saying, like, you know, it's not gonna plug the hole, which is the point.
Well, don't we all want to plug the hole, Nick?
I have no idea what we're talking about at this point.
Hole in forever. What my transition is meant to do is that when you're at Walmart, you might have seen some of these giant-sized comic books.
Yes.
Sitting in the magazine shelves, right? You might see these DC comic book series here in the Walmart, right?
Yes.
You got your Batman, your Superman, your Justice League, and whatnot.
Teen Titans, Wonder Woman.
All that stuff, right. They would fall under the whatnot.
Of course they would.
And according to this here press release, Walmart's 100-page giants are going to be collected. The original stories, let me be clear. The original stories from these 100-page giants are going to be collected and released in comic book stores. It all starts on July 3rd with Superman Up in the Sky number 1. Written by Tom King with art by Andy Kubert and Sandra Hope. And this collects the stories that were in the Superman giant when it first launched, the original stories. What are your thoughts on this, Nick? Do you like this?
Yes, considering the fact that I didn't want to buy, you know, a 100-page comic to get a book where the majority of it would be stuff I'd already read. Yes, I like this idea. It gives me an opportunity to get, for example, I believe Brian Michael Bendis did a Batman story for it. Was it Bendis? Yeah, so opportunity to pick that up. And of course, by pick that up, I mean not pick it up.
Not pick it up or read it.
Yeah. But right. I can act like I'm going to. I can pretend. I'll pretend right. with the best of them.
Kind of like I'm doing with that Lois Lane book.
Yep.
You know, have I actually contacted my local comic book shop to add it onto my...
No, but hey, you might actually read that in a year on DC Universe.
True. Well, unfortunately, the one comic book that I'm still reading, Nick, Doomsday Clock, continues to suffer from unfortunate delays. This one, most unfortunate. DC has rescheduled Doomsday Clock number 10 once again, and this time it's being pushed out to May 15th, 2 months later than the originally solicited March 27th date. Every week for the past 4 weeks, DC has revised the release date and has not given a reason. All the stranger, Gary Frank, the artist, shared art from number 10 on February 22nd on Twitter. So I don't know what the problem is, but nonetheless, they're suffering delays. And yes, Nick, I have been vocal in the past that I think that much is made about delays for no real reason in the modern context, because I want quality, and I think that single issue comics are largely outdated as a model of publication. However, even I gotta admit, this is getting crazy. We're gonna end up with Doomsday Clock being finished 2 years after it started, and that's with 12 issues. So that's gonna be, and that's if we're lucky. The first issue came out, I think, in November of 2017. If I'm not mistaken.
I don't even remember at this point. That's how long it's been. Makes me feel better that I've given up on trying to read it. You know, that I can just, I'm at this point,
just you wait go for the trade.
So long between issues. I'm just gonna wait for the trade and read it all in one big pop.
And I think that it's really unfortunate, because I've read comments online of so many people have given up on this book because of the delays. And it's unfortunate because it's great. It's one of the best things that Jeff Johns, in my opinion, has written. It's one of the best things that Gary Frank has drawn. In fact, I would say it is the best thing that Gary Frank has ever drawn. It's the best work of his career, and I feel like a lot of people are missing it. It still sells really well, but it's not. It doesn't have the momentum that it once had, and it feels like the effects it could have on the DCU are virtually non-existent now as a result of the universe seemingly moving on to the visions of Scott Snyder and Tom King.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know, man. I love this. I'm not going to back off of my love for this series. I love it. And I am still in the boat that I would rather get them. I would rather get high quality, because to me, it just saves me money. But I understand the frustrations that people have that are looking forward to reading this every month, and then it keeps getting pushed back. I would just say to everyone out there, if you haven't started on Doomsday Clock, get the trade when it comes out, because it's been a great story so far, and hopefully they'll land the finish.
Awesome.
All right, well, that is the end of the rundown. My gosh, felt like we had a lot to talk about this week.
Mm-hmm. But we got through it.
We did. And that means it's time for our segment called Reading and Watching. So, Nick,
let's not waste people's time with that question anymore.
All right. Neither one of us have been reading. But we've been watching. We love to watch.
Mm. Which nice. We only watched one thing this time, right?
That's correct. Yes, yeah. The return of DC's Legends of Tomorrow. And Nick, this show just knows how to strike at the heart of us, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. I had not paid any attention to, synopses for what the upcoming episode was going to be about. I had honestly forgotten the show was coming back until I saw it on my DVR. And then when I went over to the DVR and saw that the first new episode was titled Lucha de Apuestas, I was like, oh, this is going to be awesome. And sure enough, it was.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Anytime you cross our stream, so to speak, mm-hmm. of interest between wrestling and comics, we pay attention.
We do.
And boy, they got us with this one. This was really, really good. We got a 619 in the episode.
Speaking of which, completely off topic, crossing streams, did you see that WWE is hiring a continuity director?
Oh, I did not see that.
They should absolutely give that job to somebody who has comic book experience.
Yes.
As I've said for years, I feel like there's so many parallels between comics and wrestling that I feel like if you're a good writer of one, you at least have you know, qualities that would make you potentially successful at the other.
Yep, and we know that there are plenty of comic book writers that are wrestling fans.
Yes.
Whether it be Scott Snyder, Jason Aaron. Now, they're not going to go probably, but you know, you can offer money to somebody that has that experience to serve in that sort of editorial role, your Jim Shooter editor-in-chief kind of role to keep things streamlined so you don't have characters who hate each other teaming up with each other because they're both heels.
Yeah, apparently they posted – I read the the job requirements, and it was like you have to watch every piece of content that WWE puts out every week to include all their social media stuff, and then you have to edit every piece of writing that's done for – specifically for continuity. Not for content, but looking for places where continuity conflicted, which – This is overdue. The company should have hired one of these years ago.
And I'm just going to say it. If the company wants to hire me right now, I'm available.
Well,
and I'm available cheap. I'll do it.
Maybe you should apply.
Maybe I will apply. Maybe I'll not get it. What if they hired the both of us? What if right now Vincent Kennedy McMahon's secretary is listening to our podcast?
Maybe she is. And she should obviously want to hire us, given how we've been praising her boss for the greatest speech in human history the last 2 weeks.
That's right. See, we wouldn't edit anything for continuity. We would just edit in that speech to everyone's promo.
Yes, I understand that. Quite frankly, I understand that.
That can't be me winning my first WWE championship and then being in a tag team match 2 nights in a row. That can't be me. That's not fair. Anyway.
Legends of Tomorrow. Lucha Day of Tomorrow.
Excellent. Yes, 619 was in the episode. We got to see some further storyline development with a lot of different folks across the board here. Namely, Nate and his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Nate's... Realizing that his dad's up to no good.
And the beginnings of a Nate and Zari relationship, it seems.
Yes, absolutely. I picked up on that as
well. Good for Nate.
Yes. I got to say, man, Zari can wear that dress.
Mm.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mick Rory. But yes, it was a hell of an episode, as we've come to expect from the show. But just a great way of coming back with a bang.
Mm-hmm.
Because I guess technically this was their mid-season premiere, right?
Yeah, and then I guess they're back until the end of the season. So looking forward to that. I think next week we get a Nixon episode, which should be fun.
Hopefully with the same makeup the guy from Watchmen. The Watchmen movies.
Take us to DEFCON 5.
Where's Dr. Manhattan? It was a great episode. I'm a little over the constant breakups and get back togethers of Sarah and what's her name?
Ava.
Sarah and Ava.
I'm far more over everything Mona, and that seems like we're ramping up Mona's inclusion than we are decreasing it. But
Ava. Oh man, that's another thing. What a tragic! I was actually hurt by the death by a Satan death in this episode. The death of an individual who is not a regular cast member, or should I just say it?
I just wish that the person who fired the firearm had missed over that person's right shoulder and hit the person that was standing close to them.
I just feel like they've told the story of Ava and Sarah being on and off again 150,000 times at this point. But I will say about Mona, it did feel like she wasn't portrayed as such a moron this time around as she has been in the past. So I thought, you know, a little step in the right direction, huh?
I guess.
Well, with that being said, that's all we've watched other than Shazam this past week. And I'm trying to think. Nope, I haven't watched anything else. So with that being said, that's the end of that. Now it's time, as I look over to my right in the studio here, Nick, at our custom-made gigantic Rolex watch that's embedded in the wall. And it tells me that it's time for the extended wrestling minute.
Mm.
Of course, this week was WrestleMania weekend, a big weekend of wrestling activities, the biggest wrestling weekend of the year, with independent shows, Ring of Honor, New Japan, Evolve, Josh Barnett's Bloodsport, the Hall of Fame ceremony, NXT Takeover, WWE Access, and of course the granddaddy of them all on Sunday night. What a weekend of activities we had here, Nick. I have witnessed Takeover, the Hall of Fame ceremony, and the entirety of WrestleMania. What all did you get to check out this weekend?
I checked out, of course, NXT Takeover, the Hall of Fame ceremony, the ROH New Japan G1 Supercard, and WrestleMania itself, in addition to the Raw and a little bit of the SmackDown from post-WrestleMania as well.
Of course, yep. So let's run down. We're going to go through card by card. What were some of the standout moments or matches of the weekend for you?
Well, obviously, as always, the entirety of NXT Takeover delivered. I thought Velveteen Dream and Matt Riddle had the match of the night. I agree. A lot of people disagree with that, but I love that match. Thought it holds up very well against a lot of the other things that I saw during the weekend. G1 Supercard, to me, clear match of the night was Tetsuya Naito and Kota Ibushi for the IWGP Intercontinental title. Stole the show, in my view.
I like the sound of that.
Yeah, stole the show, in my view. WrestleMania, good show. Was it perfect? No. I mean, these modern WrestleManias, they're long. And I know you and I have a little bit of a different feeling about that. Not too different. I think the length is more of an issue, I think, than you do. But for a 7-hour show, I thought it was about as good as you can be. Triple H and Batista nearly killed the show. But main event was good enough to bring it back. Had enough feel-good moments throughout. Solid WrestleMania top to bottom.
Yeah, and I would just piggybacking on what you said. I thought TakeOver was a great show. I actually don't think it's the best TakeOver ever, which I've seen floating around, but I thought it was a
very,
very good...
People say that after every TakeOver, it feels
yeah,
like.
Yeah, but I thought it was a great show nonetheless. Tag title match with Ricochet and Aleister Black was excellent. I actually thought we were going to see a... Even though I knew they were getting called up, they had me on some of those near falls where I thought we had seen a title change. I thought the Velveteen and Matt Riddle match was the match of the night for me as well. It was eye-opening, because that's the best I've seen from Matt Riddle. I haven't had a chance to watch him work much on the indies. I saw him work one show in Orlando a couple years ago, and honestly, he looked good, but he didn't look great. He looked great at TakeOver. His offense was Brock Lesnar-like, 2002 Brock Lesnar-like. And then I thought, and then the main event, I thought I'll be honest, I thought the first fall was a little lackluster in the main event from what I've come to expect from Johnny Gargano in particular, who I think is has an argument as the best wrestler in the world right now. I thought the third fall of that match was about as good as pro wrestling gets. I thought it was some of the highest level drama I've ever seen in a match. It was outstanding. A great match. To me, Riddle and Dream stole the show. And then Hall of Fame was a fun show for the most part. I was obviously saddened by what happened to the Hitman, my childhood hero, but was also very uplifted by the actions of the wrestlers who stepped in and took care of business and took care of one of their own. And as a side note, it was great to see Brett seem to really have a great weekend and enjoy himself and have fun with some people that he's had been at odds with at times over the years. So it was good from that standpoint. It was a great weekend. And then WrestleMania, I thought was great. I really did. I thought it was a damn fine show. Long as hell, as we all know, you're not going to have a perfect WrestleMania in general. But I thought it was the most uplifting WrestleMania top to bottom that I can remember in many, many years. Because pretty much all the babyfaces won. Almost every babyface on the card won. And even the babyfaces that didn't win were those, other than Baron Corbin, were those that had some level of support from the crowd. So I thought the moment of the weekend was Kofi Kingston winning his first WWE title. And in a brilliant match with Daniel Bryan, who I thought was just exposed for being such a genius. I mean, we've always known how great Daniel Bryan is, Nick. We've been fans of his for many, many years. But and that's not – and Kofi is amazing, and Kofi deserves every single thing he's getting right now. But that match was such a masterpiece in patient, long-form storytelling, and Daniel Bryan was kind of the engine that kept that match that built and structured the match, and Kofi was there for everything, every step of the way. Just one, I think one of the best WrestleMania matches in the modern era. It was that good. It told an amazing story. It'll be remembered for years to come, I think, and gave us a moment that is certainly the best WrestleMania moment since Daniel Bryan won the championship at WrestleMania 30. So, outstanding stuff.
Absolutely.
Well, that...
Oh, and a little bit of late breaking news, the AEW, All Elite Wrestling, yeah, allegedly, seemingly, are going to have a television presence on either TBS or TNT come the fall. So that's good.
I like an idea soft floated out there, Nick. What do you think about 6:05 Eastern on the Superstation on Saturday nights? Of course, it's going to be on Tuesday.
I was about to say, I think they've already targeted Tuesday as their time. So,
yep.
So, no, I don't think that's a good idea, Greg.
No. No, 6:05 on a Tuesday, not so good.
No. The only one that should be on the Superstation at 6:05 on a Tuesday is, you know, the pregame Braves show baseball. For Atlanta Braves baseball, but that era will never return for some stupid reason.
That's right. We just can't get things to be they were exactly as they were when we were kids.
What the hell is a Michael Blackson? Anyway, moving on.
I have no clue what you're talking about.
Apparently some comedian named Michael Blackson.
Oh, yes. That's that list of comedians coming to center stage. Mm-hmm. It's like a bunch of redneck comedians and then that Michael Blackson guy. Mm-hmm. And then Mick Foley. Mick Foley is coming to Dothan. Mm-hmm. Can't believe it. Going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
With all that being said, let's push all of that aside.
Mm-hmm.
Because coming up here... Oh... This past weekend at WrestleMania, Nick, we had a match that you referenced that was actually a bit of a going away party. So tell us a little bit about what we have for our next segment.
Yeah, so I referenced that Triple H and Batista match earlier in the Wrestling Minute. And while it wasn't very good, we came to find out about 24 hours later on Monday during the day sometime that it was going to mark the official retirement of Dave Bautista from in-ring competition. Bautista, of course, left his mark in the mid to late 2000s with WWE. A couple of comeback runs since then. The most recent one culminating in his match with Triple H at WrestleMania 35. But I know, you know, we wanted to think of a way to celebrate Bautista here on the show. And I know Greg,
hey Dave,
you and I both are big fans of his entrance theme. And so we got to thinking and we thought, hey, you know, the new tradition on our show, not even anymore, the tradition on our show at this point is to have WWE Hall of Famer, good old JR Jim Ross, sing us out the door. So what better way to pay homage to the animal than a little bit of Jim Ross and his rendition of I Walk Alone?
Not to be confused with the gospel song I Walk Alone, quite frankly. But now... You know, it's funny you mentioned this, Nick. This is a subject that's very near and dear to my heart. You know, somebody had to sign a young kid once upon a time, rough around the edges, named Dave Bautista. Somebody had to have the vision, the courage to sign the 6'5", 300-plus pounder to a WWE developmental deal, send him to OVW, and then watch and support him as he became one of the biggest stars in our industry. Who do you think that feller might have been there, Nick?
Oh, I'm going to guess Johnny Ace.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
Bruce Pritchard?
Hell no.
Terry Taylor?
You're not even trying at this point. Do you not realize it was me, you stupid son of a bitch? I signed him. And I'd do it again. Greatest roster in the history of the business. Now, let's get this thing on the road. Oh, yeah! This television has a poison on its breath. Well, this counterculture of both wicked lies and death. It makes my eyes bleed every time I turn around. how will they all feel when I bring them to the ground? And I'll say, you know, I walked for miles inside this pit of danger. Not to be confused with the snake pit, Jake the Snake's old talk show segment he used to have in the WWE. A place where no one follows me, I walk alone. That's right, I walk alone. Huh! I'm sick of all these people talking out their heads. I've never understood a damn thing that they've said. From words to actions, never knowing what they are about. I guess I'll have to blue chew them up and spit them out. And I'll say, you know, I've walked for miles inside this pit of danger. God damn, I'm getting tired of walking. I've swallowed down 1,000 years of anger. The weight of the world, which is akin to that of the late King Kong Bundy, is falling on my shoulders. A place where no one follows me, you know, I walk alone, quite frankly. Oh yeah! I walk alone. Oh yeah! Yeah! I walk for miles inside this pit of danger. I've swallowed down 1,000 years of anger. You know, a weight of the world is falling on my shoulders. A place where no one follows me, I walk alone. And you know, folks, it all comes down to this. You can have a partner in this business, but you're not in this business to make friends. You get in this business to make friends, you get in this business to make money. Me, I walk alone. Yeah.
Our traveling fanboys.